QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q. Net control for the Tech Tuesday Net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, plus offset of 600 kilohertz and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. Yep, we wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. More information about the BBARC can be had at bbarc.org. That would be bbarc.org. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. All right, topic for the evening. I think we were announced this last week, but we'll be pulling from the March issue of QST Magazine, so this year, on page 45. And this will be about stacking Yagis. What is a gain? I mean, what do you gain besides a gain? And what other features are involved? So stay tuned for stacking, I'll get it right, stacking Yagis. Sometimes hard to say. All right, but first let's do our roster here, starting with WB6CLZ Mike.
Good evening, Tom, and everyone on the net. This is WB6CLZ in Eastern Big Bear.
Well, glad to have you up here. How about WB6CIN Cindy?
Good evening, Tom. This is WB6CIN.
And good evening, Cindy. Glad to have you and Mike up here. How about KA6CIA George?
Good evening, Tom. KA6CIA.
Well, good evening, George. Glad to have you out there. And when we don't hear from you out there, we know you're doing something, involved with something, but we do miss you out here. All right. Next, I have KJ6HCS Mike. Nothing heard there. How about WA6ITC Rod?
Yeah, from Mike Williams, WA6ITC.
And good evening, Rod. Glad to have you out there. And I have an extra ECS jacket. It doesn't have my name on it. All right. Next, I have KJ6FIL Mike in Redlands.
Good evening, all. KJ6FIL.
Good evening, Mike. Glad to have you out there. All right. Let's see if he's out there. Should be home. Grab the mic. How about KJ6KDL Jim and KJ6KDK Rosemary?
This is KJ6KDK, and would you also please check in Jim? He's in the house, but he's on the horizon. Thanks.
Not a problem, Rosemary, and appreciate you both being out there this evening. I have KI6IQA Kelly.
IR here, sir. KI6IQA.
Good to have you out there, Kelly. Thanks for listening in. Next, I have K9AOG, Steve, in Long Beach. Hey, don't hear Steve out there this evening. How about K6GVL Ron in Green Valley?
Good evening, Tom and Annette. This is Ron, K6GVL from beautiful Green Valley Lake.
And good evening there, Ron. Thanks for being out there with us and checking in from Green Valley. Next, I have 86PL Harold in Riverside.
Good evening, 86PL. And we're
what it's worth, it may be my location, but I only have the repeater S9, and it's full quieting, but like I said, it could be where I'm parked, but it's only S9 down here, 86 PL.
Okay, roger that. Well, we'll check on that. Hopefully nothing's gone awry. Not much left to go astray with that thing. Next I have KJ6RAY Ray.
Well, good evening, Tom and Annette, and we're here mobile, going home, KJ6RAY.
Okay, Ray, I got you loud and clear in the repeater. My golly, really solid in there. And let's see here, see about Echolink, how about W6AWL? Well, maybe he's still working on getting that Android phone working. That's something new there. Anyway, Art, see you out there, and good luck with that. Let's see, next I have is W6JLM Judith and W6KMM Ken.
Good evening, Tom and the Net. This is W6JLM Judith. Kenneth will not be checking in tonight. He hasn't been feeling well today, so he's sleeping. You guys have a good night.
Well, good evening there, Judith. Yeah, a lot of different little bugs going around out there. Hope he feels better. Thanks for you being out there. Next, I have KJ6PYV Dave.
Good evening, Tom and the Net. KJ6PYV checking in from Sugarloaf.
And good evening there, Dave. Glad to have you with us this evening. Next, I have K2BBL Allen in Moonridge. All right, not hearing him out there this evening. How about K6YNW Chris?
Good evening. Hey, I bet you're glad that the police work's down there, done there. K6YNW.
Here this evening, and hope the signal's hitting you well out there. Next, I have W6POO Chip.
This is W6POO, and Tom, he just had a dropout. He just had, seconds ago while you were talking to Chris, moments ago, so you might want to make a note of it. W6POO.
Okay, Chip. Hey, real quick, is our signal okay out there for you?
Sounds great. You're as strong as you were the day you were up on top of the mountain fixing it, so all sounds fine here.
All right, good deal. Yeah, I think Harold might be behind something there. That's a possibility. All right, let's see. How about Ron, WA6HF? Okay, don't hear Ron out there. How about KD6LAN Bill? Nothing there from Bill. How about WA6DLB Donna? Nothing heard. How about NQ7RD Rick? Nothing heard from Rick. Let's try AE6CK Victor.
Good evening, Tom and Annette. Victor on Papa Speaks.
And good evening, Victor. Good to see you at the meeting there. And boy, what a meeting. Went pretty long. A lot to talk about. You take care out there. Let's see if he's back. How about KA6ROD Rob? Okay, you don't hear anybody out there. How about W6JET Rob?
Good evening to the net, W6JET.
And good evening there, Rob. Glad to have you out there listening. Hope the signal's getting to you just fine. Well, that is pretty much it, other than a million scribblings I have on this sheet, which I can always, I actually probably need to rewrite this thing. That would be a thought. Anyway, anybody else out there would like to check in as a guest, please come back to KF6Q.
CLC.
Okay, got the last part of that call, I believe it was COP, and if do have you in here, you're just kind of on the borderline there with a repeater, but I got you. Anybody else? All right, well, that is fine. Everybody else can join in at any time. Any questions or suggestions? Well, Mike, first off, let's any great news here on the solar end? And maybe did it help your DX, or were you able to do any DX? This is KF6Q, Tech Tuesday, and the group, 2, WB6CLZ.
Oh, Tom, the extent of my DX right now is Echolink CW. That's about it. Well, anyway, Space Weather is reporting a sunspot number of 59 and a solar flux index of 95. And they did have a pretty good CME on the far side of the sun yesterday. And that was caused by old 1678, who rotated off probably 2-3 days ago. So causing trouble on the other side. And there is a 1678 is going to rotate around, I guess, again, and maybe give us some issues. So who knows? Maybe we will squeeze a little bit of activity out of sunspot cycle 24. I don't know. I'm pretty disappointed in it, but I haven't given up yet. There could be things to come, but maybe not. Anyway, a little excitement, though, on the QSL cards. I got a packet of QSL cards from the Bureau the other day, and I was here on the repeater. Oh, gosh, I don't have it with me, so I don't know the exact date. But some girl guides in Surrey, England, were there touring the observatory and worked the repeater here. I worked them through the repeater on Echolink. So I got 7 QSL cards from all of the different girls. That was kind of exciting. And a bunch of other ones that I'd forgotten that I'd worked all over the world. So that's my excitement for the week. Back to you, Tom.
Well, that's pretty cool, Mike. Glad to hear that. And, you know, this issue, too, there's a pretty neat article about the sun. We're going to see if we can get to that sometime this month here before the next one comes out, which is usually about the middle of March. You want to kind of jump ahead with what we're going to be looking at over the next few weeks. Very cool article coming up. Probably do this next week on battery characteristics, part one. And this is actually, he has an article that runs month to month, different experiments, some great information here. So probably start on that next week, and the other part two hopefully will be out the next issue. So a good little two-page thing, and it's basically with all the different types of batteries, their charge and discharge cycles, some good explanations of what battery chemistry is all about, some good explanations of how much a battery can hold, what the amp hour figure actually means, and how to calculate out the best charging time and voltage. So a lot of good stuff here. So we'll be getting into that. But this evening, as we were talking about last week, we're getting into the case for stacking Yagis. And Mike, this is by Joel R. Hallis, W1ZR. Pretty cool. Well, I'll let you lead this off, Mike, with the first paragraph there. KF6Q, back to you.
Hey, Tom. Well, as most of us know from listening to Tech Tuesday here for a while, and we've had to pick up some of this stuff, that a Yagi is a type of antenna, and it's used to provide gain and directivity. And basically what it does is it focuses radio signals on both the transmit and the receive portion. And basically not the same way that an amplifier does, but it basically provides, focuses the signal so that it seems like you're amplified. And what it does, though, that's a good characteristic, and also they have front-to-back ratio, is what it's called, and so as it focuses, you're not getting all of the signals like in a 360-degree antenna, like a ground plane or something like that, where you're receiving everything in all directions. You're just focusing on one direction, and that's basically how the Yagi effectively amplifies signals without an amplifier. Go ahead and fine-tune that for me, Tom. Back to you.
All This is KSXQ, Tech Tuesday in the group, every Tuesday that we can. Well, I saw this as a demonstration, and I think it's probably the best physical representation. If you were to take a balloon, which is blown up, and it's basically like a sphere, that would be your typical pattern, and I say basic, don't carve this all in stone. That's your basic typical pattern of an omnidirectional antenna. However, with a Yagi, it's if you kind of squish the sides, and then because of the air inside the balloon, it starts elongating, I guess you'd call that, in one direction, opposite the sides that you're squishing in. And that's what a Yagi does. So effectively, its range reaches out there further because of this squishing effect of the directionality of the elements and the nature of it. And by doing this, it appears to have gain as it now is picking up signals further out than it did before. Ergo, gain. And of course, the receive part works in just in the reverse and does the same thing. So pretty much that's a good physical representation of that. Back to you, Mike, real quick. Anything to add to that?
Well, that's represented on the, if anybody has the page 45 of QST in front of them, that's represented on the azimuth plot there. I mean, you can see exactly how it looks like it's a balloon squished down, and, a picture's worth a thousand words. That pretty well does it.
Now, that's a pretty good representation there, but I like the balloon, and after you're done, you can tie them into doggies and clowns. All right, let's move ahead here. Antenna gain, if antenna gain is good, is more better? Well, could be. that's kind of a loaded question because as you add more elements in length and size, and we're going to talk about actually adding more antennas and hooking more antennas together, to get that gain, you're actually getting a narrower and narrower beam of radiation or reception. And this could be good if you're reaching out to touch someone and you know where they're at. But as you do this, your gain to the sides tends to really fall off. The gains to the back, of course, is supposed to fall off. We don't want that, even though it does kind of sneak in there. But with that right there, you have to understand that as you add more gain to that antenna, you're getting a narrower and narrower beam. Mike, I think we have something that's about a 3 or 4 element. We generally have not a very narrow beam. Do they have that actually in that little under figure 2 there? Back to you.
I figure 2, it says it's like a 3 dB gain, and I don't know what you're getting at, Tom, but it looks like the two different antennas, you have a plot of a just a regular 3-element Yagi on a 2-foot boom, and then you have that's been increased, and you have another one that's 5/8 wavelength above that. So what that's doing is showing that there's not that much difference in the two antennas when you stack them other than the 3 dB gain. As far as the, hold on just a second, QRX. Yeah, it just narrows it up a bit and causes your front-to-back ratio to change a little bit. Back to you, Tom.
Right, we can see that there, and actually, Mike, the key point here which is what we were just talking about with adding more gain, is our beam width. And that would be, straight ahead, we're perfect signal. Now, how many degrees to the right and how many degrees to the left can we turn before we start dropping off? And if you add those two, the degrees to the left plus the degrees to the right, I'll get it out there. That's your beam width. And in this case here, with that relatively small 3-element Yagi, the beam width is actually 64 degrees. That's pretty wide. Now that's not too bad. However, very long Yagis in the era of, say, about maybe 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 elements, that can get way, way down there to only about 10 degrees and less. So you really get all that gain, next thing you know, you better know where you're aiming that thing, as they say. So anyway, well, so yeah, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about getting more gain, how to do it, and exactly what we're going to end up with. Back to you real quick, Mike.
YNW.
Yes, Chris, go ahead.
Yes. You know, it can get so narrow that it's a problem almost. But the thing is, you can have a 10 dB antenna, and then you make it, almost twice as long. You get two more dB. There's a diminishing point there, and it's, you know, if you stack them, you're getting the gain without having an antenna that's, 50 feet long or something like that. K6YNW.
Exactly, Chris, and that's what we're going to stress tonight of why stacking or using them in a quad fashion where you have two across and two high, you actually have four antennas, and you may be getting quite a bit of good gain and directionality with, say, two of them side by side or two of them one over the other, or four in the pattern of a quad, and only having maybe, say, between three to five elements, maybe even seven, but you're getting this great amount of gain without it looking like it's stretching halfway across the world. Because there is a bad side to that, too, if they get really long like that. We'll touch on that in just a second. Anyway, Mike, back to you. And good point there, Chris. That's what we're looking at.
That's the whole idea, is you could go with a very long boom, but you're going to get up to a point to where it's so narrow that it's not really effectively useful, even for some of the computer aiming charts. Yeah, and a good point, if anybody's ever seen it, is Bob, WA6MQF, has the stack, the two over two, the four, the quad configuration, which works pretty well for his EME setup. Back to you, Tom.
And if anybody wants to get on the internet and search out some EME stuff, there are some arrays made with about 10 to 11 elements, and there's eight of them. Talk about what a massive amount of aluminum, let's put it that way. Well, anyway, you know, there's a couple things here. We're going to talk about that real quick, too. With a longer Yagi like that, it doesn't take much of a wind or breeze pushing on that very far out tip, especially at a right angle. It's amplified torque, and that torque obviously is going to be applied to what? Well, your rotator, because you got to have a rotator if you got a Yagi, unless you turn it by hand. So if you got a rotator and you get that huge amount of torque from being way out there, not good. If you got a shorter antenna, you're still going to have some wind load, but the torque hopefully it's going to be a lot less because it's not amplifying by being way out there like that. Anyway, Mike, yes, Bob's got a pretty good array, and I think that's probably a good representation. So this is KF6Q Tech Tuesday in the group, and Mike, anything to add to that, please come back.
Not at this point, but I see we've got a lot more to get into to kind of get a little deeper into this and delve into some of the exciting game figures and like that. Back to you, Tom.
Right, and essentially this is where, let's talk about dBs here for a second. Basically, a 3 dB is essentially a doubling of your power level. 3 dB being a decibel thing, it's actually 10 to the 0.3 power is what it amounts to. And if you actually had a little calculator and you take 10 to the 0.3 power, you're going to end up with about times 2. So anyway, so with that in mind. However, so what we say is we double the length. Let's say if we went from a 7 element to a 14 element. And if we did that, we're actually doubling the length because they're pretty well spaced. With that in mind, we're only going to go whatever gain we had at 7, we're going to double it, but it's only going to, in dBs, it's only going to be adding 3. And that's in theory. That's the way it works out on paper. You don't always get that full 3 dB. And pretty soon, you're doubling until you've got this monster, a whole lot of material up there and dollars invested, and you're going from a signal that's probably not that much noticeable. Mike, are you familiar with the gain on the S-meter and how that relates to dB?
I would think that... No, I'm not, Tom. Why don't you run through that again? I know we've been through that so many times, but go ahead.
All right, just as a little refresher. You know, we all have an S-meter pretty much with our radios or a bar graph, and a lot of times that's just a relative meter, but what that'll show for us is if the signal on the transmitting side increases, say, their power level by 3 dB. In other words, they double their power. Now, whether they either do it by an amp or if they do it by an antenna, essentially that's only half of an S unit, those little marks. It almost takes 6 dB, which is times 4. You actually have to take 4 times the power or 4 times the gain simply to make an S meter increase of 1. Say if it was S3 to go to S4, signal has to be 4 times stronger. So as you can see, on the S meter scale, it takes a whole lot of gain or change or added gain to really make that meter move a lot further. So you have to figure out at what point it is no longer dollar-wise investment smart to keep adding on that aluminum out there. So anyway, real quick, back to you, Mike.
Tom, yeah, thank you for the clarification on that. I appreciate it. I just never can get that one straight in my mind. Anyway, it seems like all the rigs that I have, the S meters are relative to something anyway. There's no absolute S meter. And I think that's what we need on these newer radios is an absolute S meter like the old ones were. When it was one S unit, it was one S unit. This one is adjustable by so many means that it's difficult to figure out where you really are. Okay, well, very good. Well, let's talk about stacking these turkeys.
Stacking them, baking them, putting them in the oven, turkey's always good. Well, so anyway, like we had talked about, and Chris had actually made a very good point about, we don't want this big, huge, long monster up there. Not that you can't use it, yes you can, but if we're really going to get something a little bit more compact with the Yagi up there, well, how do we do this? How do we go about making these antennas? How do we hook them up? You know, we all know we have a coax coming out of our radio and it goes up to the antenna, but wait, now we have 4 antennas. Let's just take 4 or 2, even just 2 antennas. Well, how do we split the coax? What's the best way to split that, Mike? Do I just get a knife and split it down the middle?
I think we need a phasing harness, and I know that when you're designing a phasing harness, that I think that the polarity, I think it has to be, you know, the tops of the antennas to the tops and the bottoms to the bottoms, right to left, and so it has to be phased properly, and it has to be cut to where you have the right impedance too. So how's that for a start?
And that's a very good start. Yeah, actually, to split the coax into 2 coaxes, the first thing we use is a T connector. And if we have multiple antennas, we may take each one of those and split it also into a T connector. And now we have 4 coaxes. There's a couple key points here, though. Like Mike said there, and just like hooking up stereo speakers, whether they're in the, you know, if you ever hooked up a stereo gear and you got a red and a black, well, we already know that's an AC signal. There's no plus or minus. But what that plus or minus means on the speaker is so that one speaker isn't moving in while the other is moving out. So they're in phase. And that way they work together. So to get our antennas to work together, we want to make sure that, say, the center conductor goes to the top elements of both or the bottom elements of both. It does not matter which it goes to as long as it's going to the same one. That's the critical point. That's step number one. Make sure that your polarity is the same. Back to you, Mike, real quick. KF62, Tech Tuesday, and the group.
But then we have some other length adjustments to deal with to get that thing right on the net. Patootie, why don't we get into that?
Well, besides, you know, once we figured out the tops are the tops and the bottoms are the bottoms, let's say we got that all figured out, Next thing we want to do is each coax coming out of that T, one's going to go to one antenna and one is going to go to the other. You need to have both of those the same length. There are special phasing arrays where they might be different, but in the general sense, 99% of the time, you need to have them the same length. That way your signal will be reaching in phase both antennas at the same time. And that's basically what that's all about. No more complex than that. And that keeps the signal reaching at the same time in the same phase, and that's great. And actually, if you did that right there alone, just that right there, you're going to be doing pretty good. You're almost there, Mike. We're almost ready to take this home. So what's the one last thing we need to think about when we're putting this together? Back to you, Mike. KF6Q.
Would think that we've got aiming, we've got to tune it, and then we've got to aim it, and we should be ready to rock and roll. What's your take on that?
Well, I kind of summed this all up in a nutshell here with an email that I sent out last week. And the last thing is that the actual physical lengths of those, let's just say we're doing two antennas. If we were doing four, we'd be doing the same thing, but we'd have, you know, equal lengths at each point, and we want to end up with four. But if we adjust the length of that coax, keep in mind, we have this magical thing called a quarter wave. A quarter wavelength, things start getting really weird. So we could have two Yagi antennas that are 50 ohm matched, perfect, but now we put them in parallel and they're not 50 ohms now, we got 25 ohms, and that's really bad. Or is it? Well, we can actually tune that back and adjust that somewhat by changing the lengths of the coax and kind of tapping in between the half wave and the quarter wave, or zero and the quarter wave, and adjusting that. That's a little complex there, but if you actually, there's a lot of formulas out there, some worksheets out there. Best thing to do is essentially use the formulas that they have, a good design, and just be careful cutting your lengths. And you don't have to be right down to the silly millimeter. Yeah, you're going to have a little error there, but you know what? For a 2-meter antenna, if you have it within a, I'd say, quarter of an inch, or maybe in a half an inch or less, you're going to be okay. KF6Q, back to you, Mike, and then we'll ask for some questions.
Basically, the tolerance aren't as critical at that frequency, at 2 meters, or this frequency, there we go, as what we were talking about, the 1200 megahertz antenna the other day, or last week. You know, you have a lot tighter tolerances on something like that. Hey, back to you, Tom.
Yeah, the 1.2 gigahertz and the 2.4 gigahertz, a silly millimeter, I'll get that out, silly millimeter is not silly anymore at all. And it starts to get pretty close to being, got to be right on there, and hope for the best. Okay, good glasses, good measuring tape, and a good file, whatever it takes. But that's pretty much it. And like I said, there's making up your own phasing harness, which seems to be that great mystic out there, and all shrouded by, under cloak and dagger stuff. Well, what is that all about? It's not that complex. And if you'd like a little help with that, there is actually in the ARRL handbook, antenna handbook, and it might even be in the regular handbook. Good information on that. But if you don't have either one of those books, you can find this out online. Do a search for antenna array phasing or things like that. You're going to bring up a ton of stuff and sort through that stuff. A lot of good information out there. Anyway, anybody out there with any questions or comments? This is pretty cool stuff. Good way to get gain with a couple antennas and not have a huge monster on your roof. Please come back to KF6Q.
KJ6RAY.
Yes, Ray, go ahead.
Yes, I would just like to add that if you're going to do phasing, especially for these antennas, use a very good connector. If you could use the end connector, it is much better than using the PL259. and don't rely on those cheap connectors because it's not going to do any good. Back to you.
You know, that's a very good point there, Ray. The T connectors or the N connectors or whatever you're using there, yes. We could only stress that, not even, there's no way we can stress it enough that the N connectors do make a huge difference. I think sometime back, it may have been a year ago, we talked about the PL259s, the SO239s, and they have lost, and they're not always the same, and they're kind of flaky. Well, we use them because they're cheap. We don't have to spend a lot of money. But if you want to get into the nitty-gritty and do a nice, clean job, and I guess the cost of end connectors is really coming down, and that's a good thing, too. A lot of good sources on eBay. And, yeah, the end connector has, like, almost zero loss to that thing. Very good to use. So, very good point. Thanks, Ray. I appreciate you bringing that up. Anybody else out there, any comments or questions, please come back.
KF6Q,
KJ6YX. YX, go ahead. Good to hear you out there, KF6Q.
The pleasure is mine, Tom. Could you, I just rolled across the frequency here about 3 minutes ago. Caught you in there on your Tech Tuesday. In regards to antenna theory, could you give me a, say, simplified definition of phasing?
Well, I'd say the most simplified thing would be, and of course I mentioned this earlier, but obviously you hadn't tuned in yet. And glad to hear you out there, too. I haven't heard you in a while. Glad you could join us, even if it was by accident. But anyway, with all that said, like stereo speakers, if you're looking just at the speaker itself out of the box, or you buy a couple of speakers from Radio Shack or whatever, and they generally have a red and a black, which is really not a plus or a minus, but that's to let you know which is which, so that when the voice coil is pushing the cone out, or it's either going to push it out or retract it in, and you want them both working together. You know, you don't want one speaker doing one thing and the other doing the opposite. Even if it's stereo, you don't want that interference. You want them in phase. So that's pretty much what the antenna phasing is you want to make sure that, say if you have two Yagis, you want the top elements of one connected to the same wire that's the top elements of the other. So they work together, work in phase. Otherwise, they will definitely not work. You get these, you know, you get them flipped with an antenna, you're definitely going to have big issues. A speaker, yeah, you'll probably still hear the sound. It just won't be as good. With the antennas, you're going to be radiating the signal. It's just going to almost be working against itself. So pretty much that's what the importance of phasing is, and like I said, by keeping lengths going to them the same off of a T connector, making sure that the center conductor on both goes to the same tops or bottoms, whichever, that's pretty much it. How'd I do? How's that?
Hey, it works for me. Yeah, it works for me. Could we, in shorter and simpler terms, could we go so far as to say that phasing in antenna theory and construction would mean not necessarily proper connection, but proper conductivity.
And that too. Okay. Obviously, this something like this is not as easy to demonstrate on a blackboard or a whiteboard or in person, but over the air it's a little more difficult, but that would be it, to make sure that the polarity is the same. Very good point. Back to you real quick.
All right, Tom. Pretty much answered my question there. No doubt about it. Pretty much answered my question. I'm far from getting into some heavy, you know, construction myself in regards to antennas. I bought a little Watson handheld, kind of a popular little radio, or at least gaining popularity out there, bought a couple of months ago, and I'm feeding a J-pole up about maybe 20 foot off the ground, but getting into your repeater with no problem, obviously. So thank you for taking the time to answer my question. 73 all around. I'll let somebody else in there. KF6Q, KJ6OAX.
Well, KJ6OAX, good to hear you out there again, and stop by more often. We always try to be here on Tuesdays, and not on the radio as much as I'd like to be during the day if I'm busy, but hey, we're out there a lot, so thanks for stopping by. Anyway, yeah, and that's essentially just as a good example, truck drivers, which would have a couple of CB whips out there on each, say, each mirror out there on the side. Because there is one thing that we didn't talk about, and Mike, we're going to, I kind of bypassed that, and it's called our window or our eye of the antenna group. We'll get into that in just a second. But there's a reason you don't want the antennas right next to each other. And there's a reason for that. We're about to talk about that. Mike, when we talk about an eye of an antenna of a Yagi, I mean, we've already talked about that. That's just another name of what? It's pretty much the same thing. I'm going to go ahead and give you a stab, let you have a stab at that. WB6CLZ from KF6Q and the group.
I would say the eye that we're talking about, or the window, is what the antenna is seeing as radio waves coming at it, and what area. Like if you're pointed to the north, you will see stations within, what is it, 58 degrees? No, within a few degrees of north as your peak reading. But yeah, what it sees is the radio waves. That's the window. Radio waves coming into the distance that the antenna is most effective on. How's that?
Well, I think that's excellent. And like you say, it's basically what the antenna sees out there, that beam width, like we talked about, side to side, which also is up and down, too. It's like a cone kind of looking out there. And when we set another antenna nearby, we want to keep them far enough apart so these cones, they're going to overlap some, but we don't want them overlapping a lot. And obviously, the further apart they get, probably the better they're going to actually operate, because you'll get closer and closer to that 3 dB gain by doubling the amount of antennas. And that's why we don't get a doubling amount all the time, because we probably don't have them far enough apart. There's a practicality thing there. I mean, we can't have them like 20 feet apart, and they're only, you know, for this little 2-meter Yagis, it's just not going to work. So as a rule of thumb, generally about a wavelength is a good number, but you can get them closer, but a wavelength is good. So for 2 meters, that would be 6 feet, just about 6 feet, would be a good number of separation. And if the antennas are vertically polarized, that would probably be about 6 feet between the booms. If you've got them stacked one above each other, that would be for the closest element, tip of the element to the closest tip of the other element. And so you can actually, with a quad array, it starts getting pretty big. You're going to be spread out there. One wavelength is a good rule of thumb, and you'll find math that'll probably make that number a little bit more, a little bit less. That's a good rule of thumb, so you can kind of plan that out. So anyway, that's what we call the window, and that's why we separate those. Anybody out there, again, with any questions or comments? All right, well, hopefully there aren't any questions because I've explained it well and not put everybody to sleep. But it is pretty cool. I know I've got some, let's see, I think I do have one very long antenna. It's huge. Got it by taking it off of a guy's roof. And it's got to be 10 elements, and it's very long. I haven't mounted it up in the air yet. Not sure what I'm going to do with it. But I do have another one that's like 5 elements, is it 5 or 7? I think it's that one I got from you, Mike. Good antenna, and I'd like to make a twin for it and mount the two. So it's not exactly that way, but say we have two 5-element Yagis, will be like the equivalent of one 10-element. Or close, you know, not exactly. But with that in mind, now I've got something tight, compact, pretty easy to handle, and my little rotator, TR4 rotator, will handle it. So, and it'll be just fine. Anyway, back to you real quick, Mike, KF6Q in the group, as we get close to closing Tech Tuesday, and our Yagis, stacking Yagis, and all about Yagis. Back to you, Mike.
Tom? Yeah, Good Tech Tuesday gives everybody an idea on how we can get a little bit more gain out of our antenna arrays without having those big long john things that need supports just to keep them horizontal. A lot of information passed tonight, and really a good subject. I can hardly wait to actually get a couple that I could phase and get an antenna range and kind of play around with that, some gain figures and like that. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Hey, back to you, Tom.
Okay, and just a little other thing there. This is a little bit past stacking Yagi's 101. If you actually build your own Yagi, you can actually custom design that with the formulas that you can find out there, or you can always get this stuff from me. I have it here, and I'll send it to you if you email me at kf6q@arrl.net, and I'll send the stuff your way. But essentially with that, you can design your Yagi very easily to be basically, say, 25 ohms instead of 50 ohms, and then if you combine that properly, you'll be back up to 50 with a perfect match. Yagis seem to work better design-wise when they're not 50 ohms. They're actually around 25 to 30 ohms. Not sure why. It's just the nature of the beast. So, and then we try to tweak them so we make them 50, and of course we can do that. But if we know we're going to stack them from the get-go, it's always good to think, well, and there's actually a site that recommends that. It's custom designing your Yagis to be stackable, and they'll actually merge together a lot better. So, anyway, Good Tech Tuesday. Appreciate everybody being out there. Last call for any questions or comments on Yagis.
KJ6KDL.
KJ6KDL, Jim, go ahead.
Of course, I got caught on a Verizon call at the beginning, so, and I was trying to keep one ear on the Tech Tuesday while the other ear on the phone. Stop me if, I want to stop transmitting first. Stop me if you've heard this. There were a couple of things I noticed on the difference between elongating and stacking a Yagi to get gain over the obvious fact that the lower frequencies have a really long antenna. And this is something I did not know until I read this article, at least that's what it implied, was that when you build, say, a 3dB Yagi, you're getting a 45-degree dispersion of your signal off the nose. If you double it and make it a 6dB Yagi, it's going to drop to 22.5 degrees, but if you stack two 3dB Yagis, you stay at 45-degree dispersion. You don't narrow the band. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm just going to add to that just a little bit. Depends on your stacking, and you need to look beyond this article a little bit. I don't think he mentioned this here. If you have them, say, side by side, which is, you know, not really stacking if we're thinking vertical. If they're side by side, then your beam width narrows, like you say, from 45 to 22. It also does that. If you're one above the other, it's still pointing the same direction, the beam width in that direction does not. However, what it does do is the up and down window shrinks. So no matter what you do, it's going to, one of the windows will shrink. The other one will stay wide. So actually, since if you want that great open eye out there, then side by side is the way to go. If you actually want to still get it to be narrow, then one above the other would keep I'm getting this backwards. One above the other would keep it wide, and side by side would keep it narrow. So it's up to you. I mean, so you can kind of dial that in what you want. Of course, you have four of them out there, and then it starts to shrink them in. So. But, that's like I say, one above the other, which is actually what he's saying. Yes, it keeps that wide window out there. Good point there, Jim, and appreciate you bringing that out. KJ6KDL, KF6U, back to you real quick.
Okay, yeah, and the other obvious one was if you're going to the higher frequencies, say 440 or higher, making a single double length Yagi really isn't that physically long considering the material, so stacking two small 440s or higher may not make sense. But one thing I did notice, and it didn't really get, it wasn't pointed out in the article, but this is what I was thinking. If you build an antenna, it'll have a certain lobe design physically, and if you elongate it, it'll just amplify that. But if you have two antennas and one is slightly off, it looks like there's a possibility that you might have some cancellation lobes in the pattern. And I don't know if that would be a big deal or if it's really going to be anything at all, but that was the second thing that I was looking at, which might make somebody want to make a single long antenna, but at the longer frequencies, it just becomes unmanageable as a physical item. That was it, KJ6KDL.
And KF6Q, Tech 2, seeing the group. Well, that's a very good point. In fact, it's a good idea to, if you're going to build, say, two, and you're going to, or four, whatever you're going to build, or eight, or 16, or whatever you're going to do, the best thing to do is get templates for marking and drilling. And, yeah, it's, if you don't make them identical, they are definitely going to have, they're going to be different. And it may not matter, depends what element is off a little bit. See, what you want to do is basically make sure, either if you're going to buy them, of course, they're going to be factory made, they're already set to templates and cut and all that. But if you're going to make them, just take that extra step and say for your first director, cut them all at the same time. Make sure they're all the same and mark them and set them aside. And then if you can, drill the booms the same way and make sure that they're the same way, that they're set the same way, whether they're marked and drilled separate or marked and drilled all at the same time. So if you do that, and here again, silly millimeter doesn't matter with 2 meters, obviously does matter at 10 times that, up around 1.2 gigahertz, but with all that said and done, you can definitely a little construction, being careful and stuff like that, and eliminates a lot of stuff further down the road. Anyway, good deal there, Jim, thank you very much. Anybody else out there before we close Tech Tuesday? Any questions or comments? Please come back. KF6Q in the room. All right, well, I think we got it in a nutshell there. Mike, thanks for joining us, and everybody else there, Chris, Harold, everybody that's listening in and has comments. Jim, glad you could join us in spite of Verizon. Yeah, I know, it's the old work thing. I understand that. But glad to have everybody else out there also listening. Appreciate you could join us, and hopefully you can tune in again next week. We're going to get into batteries and the real nitty-gritty of it, all the different chemical compositions from lead acid, gel cells, nickel cad, lithium, ion, nickel metal hydrides, and the whole group. And this is part one of two, so we'll touch on part one next week. Be pretty cool. So a lot of good stuff there. Batteries, always very cool. Cool to know that stuff. All right. Well, QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday net. Appreciate everybody's participation. Please join us again next week, same time, 1900 hours. We will now be returning the repeater back to normal use. Everybody have a good evening.